very first time, the designation of Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel, is used. You know, there's an inevitable truth to the old saying that every dark cloud has a silver lining. I mean, the evidence is very, very clear in today's Torah reading, Vayigash, after Joseph reveals himself in Egypt to his brothers. I mean, they try to kill him while he was in Canaan. He told them that their horrible decision to want to kill him, that dark cloud, that was meant for their benefit. Otherwise, they would have not been saved from the horrors of the hunger that came with the 7 years of drought that struck that entire area, Egypt and Canaan included. That huge wave of hunger led eventually to the slavery from which God, and of course with Moses, liberated us, leading us to the creation of Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel. Now, let's leave the Jewish history books, and come with me to the history as seen by the Egyptians. They were intensely, intensely concerned about the cycles of hunger to which their nation was subjected. Years of plenty were followed by years of drought, up and down, up and down. Good years followed by hunger. Why else would the Pharaoh respond so very quickly to the advice of this guy Joseph, a foreigner, more a prisoner at that? Joseph, who came up with a possible solution to all of that. It all had to do with whether or not the Nile River would overflow following the annual rising cycle of the river and then hydrate the Egyptian growing fields. That was before the Aswan Dam, I want you to know. I mean, nothing was more important to the Egyptians. You know, when it comes to hunger, no human could control the devastation of hunger. No human can control famine. No pharaoh, no army could defeat human starvation. It all depended on the Nile River, providing the water which enabled plants to thrive. If it overflowed, fine. If not, hunger. Now, I'm not changing the subject at all when on this 31st day of December, I take a moment to wish everyone a Happy New Year. Now, I hope that it'll bring blessings of peace, of health to every one of us. But the ancient Egyptians saw things differently. Their year, their new year, began with the star Sirius. You see, it had its heliacal rising at that point. When did it rise? It occurred always just a few days before the Nile River reached its apex. When the flood it caused helped create the bread. The bread for which millions of Egyptians were waiting. The Egyptians considered that star Sirius as a herald of the coming flood. The star Sirius became a god, a deity, an object of worship because of the significance of the flood. The Egyptians were able to then get their food out of that. Now, I'm not using a Hollywood phrase when I tell you that Sirius was a rising star. It always happened in mid-July. You know, these days when we go out of our way to help hungry people through SOVA, or to plead for contributions on behalf of starving population in Sudan, we don't consider any of that. connected with a new year. But one of the first recorded new years was when the Egyptians celebrated the appearance of the star Sirius in heaven. For them, it was a new year with huge implications. Hunger would be eliminated. When I say that we Jews left Egypt, it was more than physical exodus. You know what? We left Egypt ideologically. We rejected the entirety of its value system. For example, today, precisely because it was the function of the Egyptian priests to deal with death and dying, certainly in building the pyramids and the burial tombs. And Tova and I had the pleasure of actually being in and crawling into the pyramid and being in those tombs. The building of those pyramids and burial tombs was the function of the Egyptian priests. Precisely because of that, the Torah forbids our Kohanim, the Jewish priests, it forbids them, you know, that priesthood was established at the Exodus. It forbids our Kohanim to have any relationship to death or dying. I mean, to this day, a Kohen may not go on a Jewish cemetery, on any cemetery. Stay away from death. That's just one of many, many examples proving that we left Egypt not just physically, but ideologically. I mean, no wonder the Torah makes it very clear. Right after the Exodus, not in July when the star Sirius, the Egyptian deity, will appear, but during the month of Aviv, springtime, that's when we will have our new year. Don't even think of worshiping that Egyptian deity, that Egyptian god. Believe it or not, that concept of the first yearly month of Aviv in the Jewish calendar is the very, very first commandment articulated in the Torah following the Exodus from Egypt. In that fashion, by creating our own new year in the spring at the time of the Exodus, we urgently rejected one of the major Egyptian ideologies. Deny the worship of the star Sirius, but honor the time of our Exodus when Egypt is no longer part of us. In the springtime, it's the first mitzvah commandment that is recorded in the Torah after we left Egypt. This will be your new year. That's when we became a nation. That was our new year. Oh yes, the first of our months is Nisan, celebrating spring when we begin the cycle of growing wheat and barley by planting seeds. That's the original Jewish new year. I mean, it's no secret that the term Rosh Hashanah is not only never mentioned in the Torah, the term, the word, but that it occurs on the first day of the seventh month of the year as proclaimed in the Torah. You know what? But don't worry. We Jews are not the only ones with the conflicting concepts of a new year. The original Egyptian calendar was lunar in nature, changed after successive invasions of Egypt by Persians, by Greeks, by Romans, you know, the 4th, the 3rd, the 1st century before the Common Era. And Christianity imposed its calendar during the 1st century of the Common Era. And when Islam swept over Egypt, the calendar was changed again in the late 7th century. My friends, tonight starts what we would call the Christian New Year. Following scores and scores of changes over the centuries. Obviously, too many for me to list here this morning. But January 1st became the official New Year only when Julius Caesar made it so in the first century. Oh, by the way, it should be noted that while Julius Caesar became the official church posture, the New Year became the official Jewish posture only in the year 325 of the Common Era. The abbot of Rome changed the New Year to March 25th, and only then was Christmas set for December 25. He did that in the mid-6th century. So the New Year, the Western world, that which we'll be celebrating tonight, was not at all celebrated, believe it or not, until just 429 years ago, when Pope Gregory the 13th made it so. But nations such as England, sections of Scandinavia, Germany, they accepted January 1st only about 300 years ago. Countries such as Russia and China, Turkey, waited until the first quarter of the 20th century to designate January 1st as the New Year. But what is generally not known is that the contemporary Jewish community fought very, very hard, to quash an intended proposed change that was promulgated by what was then known as the World Calendar Movement, the name of an organization. They wanted to do something else. They wanted to create a whole new calendar system through the United Nations. The week was to have not 7 but 10 days. It was to change the entire calendar to a world calendar. Didn't you read about it back in 1956? It had to do with the sanctity of the Shabbat, as far as we're concerned. I mean, I can't even imagine that the world would adopt a calendar that removed the possibility of us being able to celebrate the Shabbat every 7 days. Our standard for a week, it's from the Torah. The desire to create that innovative universal calendar would have destructed the whole structure of the week as we know it today. The mathematical technicalities are complicated, but the bottom line is that Jewish groups, and by the way, the Seventh-day Adventists, they fought so hard. They fought before that committee of the United Nations, the Economic and Social Council. They fought to nullify that proposal, which would have disrupted the occurrence of Shabbat every 7 days. The Bible would have been violated. The sanctity of the Shabbat would have been ruined. And during certain segments of the proposed newfangled year, we would never have known when Shabbat is. I mean, think of it. Jewish family life would be in ruins if that calendar would have been adopted in 1957. On what day would we light the Shabbat candles? When would we read certain portions of the Torah in the synagogue? When would we celebrate the Onek Shabbat, the joy of Shabbat, with all its glorious implications? You know, happily, the United Nations did not go for that world calendar. But these questions that I just posed about the Shabbat celebrations, why is it that fewer Jews than ever light the Shabbat candles anyway? With our calendar intact, How many Jews know or even care about what the weekly Torah reading is? What is it all about? How many Jews in the world celebrate the thrill and fulfillment of the joy of Onek Shabbat? I don't mind celebrating New Year's tonight, of course, even though the origins have to do with pagan worship. But I do worry because so many contemporary Jews don't look at the Jewish calendar and ignore holidays such as Shavuot, which marks also a kind of a new era, doesn't it? Shavuot, a new era in all of society. How society views moral and ethical values given in the commandments at Mount Sinai. Or how about Tisha B'Av, which marks the whole new way in which we worship and how we manage to live now in the exile with prayer books now. Up to then, we worship animal sacrifice on the altar of the temple in Jerusalem. It's a whole new way of living as a Jew. That's a whole new era. A whole new life, not just a new year, was created for every single Jew when the State of Israel was proclaimed in 1948. How many American Jews celebrate that unbelievable new age in our history? 2,000 years, no state, and now it's here. Doesn't Simchat Torah represent the new year for the cycle of the Torah reading? The Torah, which is the foundation of Jewish life. We Jews have so many innovative, exciting new years every single year. Tonight we celebrate the coming of 2012. But how many Jews celebrate the start of Torah reading every year? How many Jews lift the cup of wine on that new year? Does Tu B'Shvat, the new year for the trees, capture the hearts and the minds of our people, of the bulk of the Jewish population? Regrettably, most of them skip it. Now, it's scary. It's very, very scary. This new year prompts us to see what progress, if any, we have made. Now, my friends, I share with you the following statistic. In the last 50 years, and I'm talking about the population of the entire world now, the entire population of the world has grown tremendously. But the world population, and the world population of Christians has grown in these 50 years, the Christian population has grown 47%. In the same half century, the world population of Buddhists has grown 63%. The world population of Muslims has grown an incredible 235% in the last 50 years. Amazing. Now let's look at the Jewish population in the last 50 years. In this post-Holocaust era, Jewish population has dropped 4% relative to everything else. So many Jews continue to ignore the joys of the many New Years that each cycle of time enabled us to celebrate. All the old New Years, from the Egyptian era to how the Romans did it, all the modifications, they present us with the fascinating pieces of history. But let us Jews use our own calendar to refocus on all the meaningful spiritual New Years with which we are blessed. The Talmud says that every breath each of us takes is a new year. Life starts all over again for us with every heartbeat. So I pray that our New Year celebration will be much beyond tonight, and that each of us will learn from the Torah. Every time we open it, that we learn that this is not just a new year, but a whole new era. As we grow in numbers, hopefully, and we relish the tomorrows ahead of us. So I wish you a happy new year and a Shabbat Shalom.